My guest at this time is Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. He is the author of numerous books, most recently, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Communism. Dr. Kengor is one of the leading scholars on communism and joins us now to discuss the book and why some of the principles discredited during the Cold War are unfortunately making a comeback. And Dr. Kengor, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, sure, Greg. Always good to be with you. Thanks.
Well, a quarter century ago, we thought the Cold War was over, with the Soviet Union defeated, communism essentially discredited as a failure, and responsible for killing tens of millions of people. But just 25 years later, a large percentage, not a majority perhaps, but a lot in this country want government control of healthcare, education, and other sectors of our society. Those ideas clearly making a comeback. Why?
Well, that's a good question, Greg, and I'd say three words, education, 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 or maybe I should say miseducation, or ignorance, but it all kind of goes together. And, you know, I think this is the natural byproduct of our K through 12 public schools, our government schools, and especially our universities, failing to teach people the horrors of communism. You know, they've done a bang-up job teaching the evils of Nazism and fascism, but you know, for the 100th anniversary of Bolshevism and the Communist Revolution, which is what we're at right now in October 2017, everybody should be able to say, oh, yeah, 100. Yeah, they killed 100 million people, didn't they? They should be able to say that. But unfortunately, as one survey found last year, a frightening number of Americans actually think that George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin.
What?
And that is just madness. Yeah. I cite that study in the book. It's not a majority, but it's 25-28%, something like that. And that's not just, you know, dopey millennials. We like to pick on millennials, right? I mean, that's Americans across the board. And I don't have data on this, but I'm sure that the vast majority of Americans think that Hitler killed more people than Stalin, when in fact Stalin killed, by some accounts, including Alexander Yakovlev, he said Stalin alone killed 60 to 70 million people. Hitler killed about 10 million. So, and in fact, while I'm at it, Stalin's not even the greatest killer. Mao is. So, you know, this is a frightful, dangerous ideology, and people don't know that because we fail to educate them.
Let's talk about the massive slaughter of innocents in communism in a little more detail here, because as you point out in the book, and it's an argument we hear a lot from the very far left, and that's that, well, communism is great in theory, it just hasn't been applied right, whether it's the Soviet Union or Cuba or now Venezuela. Well, even if you put some credence in that, you'd think by now they would have gotten it right if it had some merits to it. But why does it always end in major persecution and usually a lot of state-sponsored murder?
Yeah, because people have done it right. That's what it comes down to. I mean, what other ideology or system that has been tried by so many different people on every different continent? I mean, every possible different ethnic group or nationality, and yet everywhere it goes, it leaves a trail of corpses, whether in Cuba or Cambodia or East Germany, the Soviet Union, China, now on its way to Venezuela, which they conveniently call 21st century socialism. But wherever it goes, it leaves a wake, a trail of death and destruction. I quote in the book James Kirchick of the Daily Beast, who's a liberal. He's an anti-communist liberal. And he said that it really bothers him how often he's heard from fellow liberals the canard that communism isn't responsible for all those deaths. Crappy leaders were responsible for it. And, well, you know, how many crappy leaders do you have that were communists before you finally blame it on the ideology? And, you know, the fact of the matter is if you simply read the Communist Manifesto, which most people haven't, including Greg, all the college students around the country who tell me, oh, hey, the Communist Manifesto is really pretty good book if you just read it. It talks about sharing, helping your fellow man. I know right away they haven't read it, because when you read it, my six-year-old daughter could come away from that book saying, Daddy, they're going to kill 100 million people if they do this. It's an awful book. And you talk about banning all private property and the other things that they talk about in the Communist Manifesto. Like Marx and Engels themselves said, despotism will, of course, be necessary in implementing this.
Let's talk about Marx a little bit more, because you talk about him in the book. People think of him as this profound thinker, whereas you point out that he was basically a leech his entire life, first off his parents, then off his partner, Friedrich Engels. His wife was very well-to-do before she married him, and they lived in destitution. He didn't even really bathe. I mean, to sum it up in common language, he was pretty much a loser. So how did he become this respected grandfather of this ideology that has led to so many people's death?
Yeah, it's a good question. And isn't it funny, too, how progressives, right, who pride themselves in being new and always changing and always evolving. And remember, Greg, as we learned 20 or 30 years ago, they can't stand what they call DWEMs, right, dead white European males. You know, those are the bad guys. Well, if that's the case, why are they clinging to a 19th century ideology championed by two white German dead guys, right? Marx and Engels. And then for the really sophisticated modern day secular, progressive, democratic socialist, you know, they cling to other social democrats like Herbert Marcuse, the cultural Marxist of the Frankfurt School. Well, there's another dead white German. So, you know, they're always talking about how they're evolving and, you know, they're going to new horizons. And it's us conservatives who believe in all these bad ideas from the past. Well, don't give me that hokum. I mean, you know, you guys are running around, you know, clinging to ideas of, you know, men from the 18th century. There's even a Jacobin magazine that the left has out there right now. Gee, the Jacobins were dead white French guys who guillotined 40,000 people between 1793 and 1794. So the left really isn't against dead white European males. They're just against the DWEMs that they don't like.
And I encourage folks to look more at the connection with the French Revolution. A lot of folks, unfortunately, due to lack of education, as you mentioned before, seem to think there's a lot of parallels between the American Revolution and the French Revolution, maybe because they happen so close to one another in history. But when you look at the principles and the outcome of those revolutions, they could not be much more different.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, I mean, there were – Edmund Burke wrote about this, and, you know, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and other American founders, Thomas Paine, you know, they all looked. They all looked at the French Revolution. They all considered it. Thomas Jefferson was an advocate. He was pretty excited about it. John Adams was very pessimistic. And in fact, Adams said to Thomas Jefferson, he said, "I have no reason to be excited about a revolution of 30 million atheists."
All right, well, let's move on to our last topic now. We know your time is short, so let's – you mentioned education being the problem. Some folks think that perhaps in the 60s, the people who got involved in academia and slowly took it over have kind of instilled a sympathy for communism in our education system now. To what extent do you think that's responsible for the fact that it's rearing its head again? And perhaps more importantly, how do you beat it back into the ground?
Well, I think it's completely responsible, and I saw it coming. We saw it coming for decades. And people listening to me, there are going to be a lot of them listening right now who nod their heads when I say this. If you took Johnny or Susie, who you spent the first 18 years of his or her life, you know, teaching them the right things, and then you sent them off to that secular college, that liberal insane asylum, and handed it $20,000 to $30,000 to $40,000 a year of your life savings, and then at Christmas time, they came back with their own definitions of marriage and gender and telling you why you're a fascist for not supporting government funding of Planned Parenthood. Well, you know, you helped make this possible. You should not send your kids to these colleges. And it's like, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's ranked in the top 25. It has a good reputation at Ivy League school. Nonsense. These are academic indoctrination centers, and if you send your kids to these schools, you are going to be paying for them to have their minds destroyed. You know, Vladimir Lenin said, and I quote this in the book, "Give me 4 years with a child, and the seed that I plant will never be removed." He wanted to uproot what parents had taught. And it's amazing. Lenin nailed it exactly right. 4 years is about the time of a bachelor's degree in the United States of America.
Wow. Well, Grove City is certainly one of those pushing against the tides right now, as are a handful of others, but it's certainly a major tide overall. Dr. Ken Gore, thank you so much for your time today. Best wishes for the book.
Thanks, Greg. Anytime.
Dr. Paul Kengor is a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania. The new book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Communism. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.